Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you're frustrated with typical hunting and fishing magazines and tired of reading content, then for guys that are up in the North or up in the Midwest, check out Great Days Outdoors Magazine. Don't get left behind following the guidance of guys who don't fish or hunt in your home state. You can pick up a Great Days Outdoors Magazine subscription, and it will help you become a better Southern outdoorsman. Great Days Outdoors Magazine can be found at your local Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Tractor Supply Company, Rural King, Bass Pro Shops, or you can save online at greatdaysoutdoors.com. If you're looking for a beautiful state that's packed with outdoor attractions, check out Mississippi. Of course, you know about the Mississippi River, but there are a lot of great rivers for paddling throughout the state. Coastal Mississippi's waters are perfect for deep-sea fishing or exploring the state's five uninhabited barrier islands. You'll find national forests with campgrounds, trails, and recreational sites, 25 state parks, and wildlife management areas, too. Whatever you like to do in the great outdoors, you can do in Mississippi, where wanderers are welcome. Plan your adventure at visitmississippi.org/outdoors. I'm your host, Joe Baia, here today with my co-host Butch Theory and Clint Flowers, and today we're going to be talking about waterfowl impoundments for recreational land, for private landowners. Really, is this feasible for you? Clint, in our part of the world, we're not known as being in a flyway, but we have ducks. I mean, we all get to go on a few shoots every year, and we've had some good ones and some not so good ones. I think a lot of people look at a property and say, man, it'd be cool to have a duck hole along with my deer hunting and my turkey hunting and that kind of thing. In your experience with recreational land sales, is a waterfowl impoundment feasible for the average recreational tract in our part of the world? Like, do you find that the costs are create value over time?
Yeah, especially if you manage it well and track your results and document things. If and when you ever go to sale and you've got proof that it has been productive, then it definitely will. Just like claiming you have big deer versus documenting you have big deer, the results speak for themselves, and it carries a lot of value when you do that. You know, on the front end of things, it's all about the cost to install. So as long as you've got a good site, and also how much land you own, and that if the total cost of that, of the impoundment, is not going to drive up the cost of your overall property so much that it just blows it out of normal, you know, comparable rates for the property, then yeah, you're going to come out ahead. It's just like a fishing lake or a lodge or anything else.
Big giant cabin. Yeah.
Yeah. You just want to make sure that it fits the site well, that it's a cost effective site for that piece of property.
Do you find that your average buyer who comes to you, are they saying, Clint, if it doesn't have a duck hole on it, I don't want it? Or are they more like, hey, a duck hole's a bonus. I'm not going to buy it if it doesn't have a duck hole, but that's cool that it does. Where do most people fall? I would guess that the guy who's just, he's all about ducks, is he ain't looking for a duck hole. He's looking for the whole property to be the duck mecca. But what's your experience with the average buyer?
Yeah, average buyer, just look at it as a bonus, just icing on the cake. The true diehard duck guys are going to be very specific as far as where they want to be in our part of the world. You know, so that typically gets established up front, and those guys tend to be, you know, ducks first, and then deer and turkey are kind of the bonus. But most people, ducks are just an additional thing to get out and do with the kids or the family, and they're not expecting to, you know, bring home a 5 limits of mallards every morning like they're hunting in Canada or something. They're just looking to have some more, add some more diversity to the property, have some more experiences with the family and friends, and just have that extra level.
Yeah, diversify your recreation a little bit.
That's what I think about on my property. You get those December doldrums where, you know, you've had enough mornings of deer hunting and you're kind of just ready to mix it up. You want to talk. You don't want to worry about your scent. You know, you want to get out there with two or three buddies and get in there and just do something different. And or you see some ducks on your property. I know, Butch, y'all got a little duck hole. I got an itty bitty little duck hole on my place that it'll have some ducks. And when they're there, I go hunt them. And when they're not there, I don't. But it would be cool to be able to provide a place that you felt like you had a little bit more reliable duck population to hunt. And also, you know, we're going to get into this hopefully today, is do something to benefit the resource too. You know, feel like you're doing something to put a little something back into the resource. But like you were saying, Clint, round numbers, if you've got a property that's going for $2,000 an acre, and putting in your duck hole brings it to $3,000 an acre in an area where $2,000 is the going rate, you probably won't get that money back in its entirety, but if it can maybe fluctuate it up 10% or something like that, if I heard you right, then that's probably a good spend that can differentiate your property from the one next to it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, as long as the value added is going to be, you know, equal or greater than the cost, then you're doing good. And that's not putting any value on your experiences, right?
Sure.
So if there's a intrinsic value to that for you, or you don't really, it's not purely financial, then who cares? You know, enjoy it. But if it is purely financial, then it's, you know, that's what you're looking at is if I'm going to spend a dollar and make $1.50 back or $2 off of it, then perfect. It makes perfect sense. But if it's about experiences, then that's an internal decision you got to make.
Yeah. Well, if you got enough money that's how you can make that decision, then you're exactly right. You know, you just kind of throw caution to the wind and do what you want. But I think for most people, it's a continuum of there's this partial investment, partial enjoyment, and they got to make sure that it all shakes out. I mean, today we're going to get into a lot. We're going to talk about site selection. We're going to talk about really just the feasibility of doing this. And we're going to try to answer that question of if this is right for your property to do that. We are talking with Jake Spears from Ducks Unlimited. Jake, before we jump into planning a waterfowl impoundment, tell us a little bit about Ducks Unlimited, how far you guys reach, and really just overall, what's the goal for you guys?
Yeah, so Ducks Unlimited was originally founded in the 1930s, right on the hills of the Dust Bowl. And, you know, as that Dust Bowl hit, a lot of the prairies dried up and all the breeding habitat up north really almost disappeared over the span of a few years. And that got a lot of passionate duck hunters worried about how are we going to keep these ducks on the landscape for years to come. So they founded Ducks Unlimited as a means of pulling resources together to originally all we focused was on breeding habitat up in the prairies of Canada. And over the years, we've sort of expanded down into the United States now. And I guess the majority of the early years of Ducks Unlimited, that's all we focused on was the breeding grounds. But over time, we've come to realize that, okay, wetlands and habitat loss isn't just restricted to the breeding grounds. We have to do everything we can to keep good habitat on the ground, even in the wintering grounds, the migration corridors in the center part of the country. So now we are a continent-wide organization. We work in Canada, the United States, and Mexico, basically anywhere in the continent where ducks are. We have a role to some extent in all of those areas. And sort of what my role is, I'm in Jonesboro, Arkansas. So we're in the wintering grounds, obviously. And what I focus on is, number one, private lands outreach. We have a lot of passionate duck hunters in this state that work very hard to put good waterfowl habitat on the ground. And I go around meeting with those landowners, writing management plans for them and helping all of this wonderful habitat we have in Arkansas. I help those landowners out and making sure that that habitat is the best that it can be. And the other part of my job in Arkansas is writing grants, applying for large government grants, securing funding so we can do that same type of work on these big public land projects around here.
Very cool, man. Well, I know you guys do a ton. And one of the things that you guys are instrumental in is helping a lot of landowners consider and even put into place a waterfowl impoundment on their property. I know I've got a little bottom on my property that it kind of looks like it could hold some water. I definitely get a lot of wood ducks coming in there. It's definitely been a thought of mine, but it really seems overwhelming. I know Butch has got, you know, some spots on his property too.
Yeah, we've tried to, you know, put our own culverts in and kind of, well, this is a natural watershed, water collects here. Let's try and, you know, see if we can get some more water in here by stopping this up and, you know, putting a culvert here. And it just seems like it never works out how we planned it out.
Hire some beavers.
That's right. Yeah. They will dang sure dam it up.
Well, man, I mean, I guess the first question that comes to my mind, if you're planning a waterfowl impoundment, what kind of factors do you need to consider in choosing a site? I mean, you got to, number one, know if it's even realistic to that you can have one on your property. So what are the factors people really need to consider in terms of site selection?
Well, obviously, you want to pick a spot that can hold water. You want to look for the lowest spots on your property. If you see water pooling up in those areas just from natural rain events, natural flood events, you want to pick the spots that are going to be the easiest. The lowest spots on your property are going to be the easiest to put a levee around. You know, the lower that area is, the more it naturally holds water, that's that's shorter levees you're going to have to put up. The ground is probably already suited to holding water right there, whether it's a soil type or whatever. But and also those lower areas that do typically hold water or are more prone to flooding, those are the areas that these ducks are going to know to look for. So instead of going up to your high ground and just totally creating an impoundment from scratch, pick those low areas that waterfowl probably already looked at in the past, areas that have already flooded. That's going to be the easiest spots to build them, and they're probably going to be the most attractive to ducks anyway.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense, Jake. So it kind of sounds like you know, whenever you're picking a spot, you kind of let the land do the talking and let it decide where the duck hole needs to be. Am I understanding that correctly?
Absolutely. Mother Nature is our greatest teacher. You know, there's a lot of times where in the past we've tried to mold the landscape to do what we want, and a lot of times it doesn't work out that way. So work with what Mother Nature gives you, work with what the land gives you. And if you do that, you're going to save a lot of time and money and probably have better results in the long run.
Definitely understand that. We're talking about a ideal size here. Is there an ideal size for a, you know, waterfowl impoundment? Can it be too big? Can it be too small?
I would say the answer would be yes to both of those. A lot of guys, they have this grand idea. Oh, we want to build a 100 acre impoundment. Well, it sounds good on paper. It's a little bit simpler to do that. But, you know, the bigger you build your impoundment, that's a lot more water you're trying to hold in one levee system. You're going to have to put in a lot bigger water control structure. There's a lot more that can go wrong in those bigger ones. And ideally, I guess there's really no right answer, but in my opinion, a 20 to 30 acre impoundment is just about perfect, in my opinion. I'm under the belief that multiple smaller impoundments on a property is going to be better than one large one. That way you can kind of plant different things in different impoundments. You can increase the diversity of food sources in each of those. Less infrastructure that can go wrong in each one of those. And I just think that diversity that you can get with multiple impoundments instead of one big one can really help out a landowner.
Yeah, spread the birds out a little bit too, I would assume. Spread the birds and the hunting out.
Exactly, yep. You can rotate which ones you hunt. That way you're not just shooting one spot out day in and day out. And those ducks, especially this day and age, these ducks have gotten smarter. They're very sensitive to gun pressure. So your ability to rotate the impoundments you hunt could really, really help you out.
Speaking of that, how much property do you think somebody needs? I mean, let's just use an example and say that you've built that perfect 25-acre impoundment. Do you have kind of a impoundment per acre rate? You know, like if you got 200 acres, is that a one impoundment kind of deal? Or can you build multiple impoundments on a couple hundred acres? Like how much total land would you need to be able to have multiple impoundments that you can then rotate the hunting around on?
It all depends on what your property looks like as well. It depends on the topography, how much slope. But if you have just one, say you have a 200 acre piece of property and it's all flat bottom ground, I mean, you could put in as many impoundments as you want because it's all pretty similar elevation, not a ton of slope in it. You can really put in a good number of impoundments in it. I don't know. It's kind of a tough question to answer, really. I don't think there's any straight correct answer for that, but it just all depends on your property and how much topography is in it and how motivated you are to get the work done. I mean, you can have a 20 acre piece of property and build a 10 acre impoundment, and if you're in a good area, that could be all you need.
If that's where the ducks want to be, they're gonna go there.
Exactly.
A lot like a food plot, you know. If you're into deer hunting, I've got, you know, big food plots that are 400 yards from each other, and you see completely different deer on them, and you can hunt one and, you know, it doesn't have any effect on the other one and vice versa. And some days you hunt them and shoot a deer and, you know, they're just right back out there the next day. It doesn't really seem to affect things. I'm sure it's going to be property by property, like almost everything we talk about on this podcast very much depends.
Well, and, you know, another part of that is we hear a lot about flyways. So we've got the size right now. You mentioned the design on trying to have multiple impoundments if you can, but what if you're not, you know, right in the middle or adjacent to one of those major flyways? Is it worth it?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say it could always be worth it as long as the landowner manages their expectations. You know, I grew up in South Carolina in the upstate. It's not really a hot spot for ducks, but we have a farm right on the Broad River up in the mountains, right where North Carolina and South Carolina intersect. And you look at that river and you say, oh, well, probably not many ducks up here, but we have a fish pond up there that every now and then we'll see some wood ducks and stuff. And one year we decided, oh, what the heck, let's build a small impoundment, 4 or 5 acres. And we went and built an impoundment and just crossed our fingers to see what would happen and planted some food in there. And we actually have some pretty decent shoots in that impoundment several times a year. You know, we're nowhere near the coast, which is the main flyway in South Carolina. Most of the ducks fly along the coast. But if you're along any sort of waterway, any sort of river system or anything, wherever you are, there's probably going to be some ducks in that general area flying around. Now, if you build an impoundment out in the middle of nowhere where you typically don't see a ton of ducks, you can't go in and build one and expect to kill limits of mallards every day. But I could just about bet that there are going to be some birds traveling through there that could find it, whether it be wood ducks, teal, maybe some divers, whatever. But if, as long as you set your expectations accordingly and you are willing to put that investment into it, you know, there is potential to have some decent shoots out of there each year.
And if you've got a new impoundment, I mean, we've heard about imprinting and things like that as far as the ducks returning. How long do you think a landowner should give it before they, you know, make that decision?
I would say the first year you build an impoundment, it's not going to be as good as it would be 5 years down the road. It took us 3 or 4 years after building our impoundment in South Carolina for ducks to really key in on it. And I think a lot of that is how we manage the water in that impoundment. We hold water on end of February and March there. So ducks are going to, even after hunting season, there's still good habitat there for ducks to use, completely undisturbed, not getting messed with by hunters. And I think that's a critical time when a lot of people could hold water in their impoundments and really get those birds to imprint after hunting season. As they travel back north towards the breeding grounds, if you have an impoundment that they can find and get those critical resources on their way back to the breeding grounds, I really think that's a great way to imprint ducks. And imprinting is real. Some people don't believe it, but there's been a lot of banding research going on in Arkansas that can prove otherwise. Imprinting is certainly real.
So what he's saying, Clint, is you need to build an impoundment. Send me the GPS coordinates. I'll go there for the first 5 years. I'll keep track of what's going on, keep a detailed inventory. And then once I feel like it's, you know, sufficient for you to go out there, I'll let you know if it's working or not.
I know there won't be many ducks killed, but there'll be plenty missed and scared. So that's the problem.
That's true.
Well, Jake, you know, you're talking about several things here. One is if it's going to be feasible to do this at all, right? Like we got to do site selection. We're going to need to know, is my property right for this? Just from a topography standpoint, and like, can we do this? But also, is it going to be worth it? It's going to be significant energy, significant money that's going to be tied up in building an impoundment. And like you said, if you can manage those expectations, you feel like it can be worth it. And the hard thing for me, you know, if I'm just using myself and my property as an example, like we've got some bottomland hardwoods there, see a lot of wood ducks. I don't see any other ducks, you know, but I'm not really looking for them either. I'm deer hunting most of the time. So I don't know really what's around. We're not too far from Chattahoochee River, which is not a major flyway, but it is going to have some ducks coming down it. My question to you is who does a landowner need to contact to maybe do a site visit and go, hey, let's look and see, number one, if you're even in an area that's doing this from a money and an energy standpoint, is going to give you the results that you're hoping it will. And then two, if that proves like it will be, is your property right for this just from a site selection standpoint?
Yeah. So just about anywhere in the country you are, there's going to be some local conservation entity that can come out and help answer those questions for you. My recommendation for anyone that's thinking about doing something like this, call your regional Ducks Unlimited office, call your local NRCS office, call Pheasants Forever, call somebody like that is in the know about the various programs that are out there. Ducks Unlimited's programs vary by region, you know, what we can and can't do, but a lot of areas in the country, we have staff that can come out and do a site visit totally free to the landowner. You should never pay for an initial site visit for something like this. Any NRCS, Pheasants Forever, Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, these folks will come out and at least give you that initial site visit for free, and they will tell you what resources are out there to make that project happen, how feasible is it, things like that. And then NRCS may even be able to send an engineer out there to, you know, actually help you design your impoundment. They may be able to tell you that there's some farm bill programs out there to do a 50% cost share on your impoundments, things like that, that really can make these sort of projects a lot more feasible for your average landowner.
That's a great resource. I mean, like you said, it's invaluable to be able to have somebody that knows what they're doing, has done it before, done it in your area, kind of seen it, been there, done that, come look at your place and give you an idea of if it's possible and what to expect. I think a lot of people could see the value in starting to have some duck hunts on their property and doing their part, you know, to help the resource. But I think to even begin to dream, though, you kind of need to understand what an impoundment is. It's really simple to kind of like a food plot. You know what a food plot is. You know what you got to do on a food plot. And you can look at a piece of ground and say, well, you know, this would be a good way to access it. And this would be a good way to, you know, ingress and egress when we hunt, and I can get a tractor in there and I can do what I need to do, get an excavator in there to de-stump it and do the things I need to do to get it prepared to plant. When we're talking about waterfowl impoundments, what are the essential components? Can you kind of describe what a waterfowl impoundment could look like and just what needs to be there to actually be able to hold water and hold ducks?
Yeah, so, you know, when you think of a waterfowl impoundment, a lot of people just think, oh, we need to put up some levees just to hold water on it. And that's really the only thing you need to worry about. It's easy to get a spot to hold water. You put up a levee, and if your soil type's right, you're going to be able to hold water. But I would argue that the most important component when you're building a waterfowl impoundment is how are you able to control water? Getting your water control structures put in correctly, getting the right size and the right type. Your ability to finely tune your water levels is arguably the most important part of an impoundment and successfully managing that impoundment for ducks. Most of your ducks, unless you're hunting divers, I mean, your ducks aren't, you need to be able to hold water, you know, 16 to 18 inches or less across that whole impoundment if you want to get your full, the full potential out of it. Ducks aren't, they can't go deep underwater. You know, a lot of guys will put an impoundment and have it waist deep and just nothing but corn, and really, a duck's not going to be able to get a whole lot from that once that corn runs out or spoils because they flood it too early. So you need to be able to hold a shallow flood across your whole impoundment and have the correct water control structures in it to where you can finally fine-tune and manipulate your water levels appropriately. And once you're able to do that, you can kind of manage it how you want.
Yep, and that's a great point. One thing that we've ran into, we've been messing around with it some, is getting the water off of it to be able to plant it. We've been through risers and all different kind of structures. We're pumping it up with a tractor some and, you know, putting drains in, and then the beavers stop it up and put water on it when you don't want water on there. So getting the water out of there has been a pain in the butt for us too, but I assume you need structures for both. So what kind of structures are you typically used whenever you're, you know, trying to manage the water levels?
Yeah. So typically your average landowner is going to use just a regular half round flashboard riser system, which, if you're not familiar with that, it's just a pipe that runs through your levee at the lowest point, and then you'll have a box on one end on the inside of your impoundment where you can drop boards down into that box, and each of those boards will be several inches long or several inches wide, and that's, you can incrementally pull or add those boards into your structure, and that allows you to sort of adjust your water levels that way. That's the cheaper way to do it, very effective way. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but they are very prone to beavers going in and stopping those up. Something that we have been using more of down in my neck of the woods and some of these big state properties and properties enrolled in the wetland reserve easement with NRCS, we're using what we call full round risers. And so what that is hard to just describe it, but instead of just a regular box on the end of your pipe, it'll just be a straight pipe going into the levee. And then there will be sort of this, it almost looks like a 55-gallon drum in the middle of the pipe coming up out of the actual levee with a trap door on it. And you can open up that trap door and drop your boards in right there. And then on either end of the pipe, we will weld beaver guards onto it. So beavers are still going to give it a problem, but they're only going to be able to stop up the ends of that pipe, and you can come in with a rake and just get their debris out of the end of those pipes, and it makes it a whole lot easier to manage, especially if you're not able to get out there every single day when beavers are around, when you have a regular half round structure.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. Farm Credit of Northwest Florida. Farm Credit of Northwest Florida has over a century of experience providing financing for people who live, work, or play in the country. Farm Credit is here to help you make your dream of country living a reality. Their unique cooperative structure allows them to return some of their profits back to their borrowers. This patronage distribution effectively lowers a borrower's rate. To get started with your first or next land purchase, give them a call at 855-GO-RURAL or visit them at www.gorural.net.
Texas Hunter. Texas Hunter Products is celebrating 70 years of engineering the highest quality outdoor products in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality, dependability, and durability. Their premium standards have earned the trust of generations of anglers, hunters, and outdoor enthusiasts across the country. Texas Hunter directional fish feeders feature patented technology and are among the highest rated in the industry. With multiple capacities available and deployment options for shorelines or docks, Texas Hunter has the fish feeder for any lake or pond. You can trust that Texas Hunter products will meet your needs for generations to come. Learn more at texashunter.com.
Bucks Island Marine. At bucksisland.com, you can check out the full list of inventory from new and used bass, pontoon, and bow rider style boats, new and used motors, as well as kayaks. They love trade-ins, which provides a steady stream of used boats, and they can rig your boat at their 18-bay service department or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians, so visit them at 4500 Highway 77 in Southside, Alabama, or give them a call at 256-442-2588.
So, Jake, that sounds like the Cadillac method on definitely managing the impoundments and dealing with the beavers, but if you're in an area that's maybe not as prominent as that part of Arkansas and other areas like that for ducks, and you've just got, you know, sort of like we've got, which is we've got ducks when we've got them and we don't further south or outside of the flyways, and we're just looking for a structure that's not as expensive or maintenance intensive to put in, something that we can kind of set and forget about postseason or things like that that aren't going to be extremely costly to take care of, or something that we've got to drive up and check on regularly. I mean, what are your suggestions there? What's the simplest and most effective setup for something like that?
Well, I will say, as soon as you put in a water control structure somewhere, regardless of how good it is, you know, where it is, if you're in an area that has beavers, you're going to have to do some regular checks on it. I don't care what kind of system you put in, unless you're putting in $1 million, 50-foot wide system with drop gates that you can just totally open up that a beaver can't stop up. But any system that your common landowner is going to use, you do need to go out and even if it's, I mean, once a month during the summer, just to keep the beavers from absolutely totally plugging that thing up. There needs to be some level of quality control checking during the off season, but there are some cheaper systems out there. I think AgriDrain makes one. It's a system similar to what I already talked about, but they use corrugated plastic, and they're meant for smaller impoundments. They're cheaper, but they are good quality, and you are going to have to go out and check for beavers every now and then, but they are a little bit more affordable to actually put in there. And if you build an impoundment that's sort of outside of a natural water system, you know, once you get it completely dry in the off season, you may not have to worry about beavers or anything. But if you are in an area that does flood naturally after a big spring rain and you have water moving through that structure, regardless of what kind of structure it is, there's going to be beavers trying to stop it up. So it just depends on what type of habitat you've built. If it's outside of a floodplain and it's not going to flood naturally in the off season, probably don't have to worry about it. But if you're in a bottomland system that does flood a lot when you don't want it to, you are going to have to do some regular checks just to make sure the beavers haven't totally taken it over.
Doesn't exist, Clint. That's what he's trying to say. Yeah, you're just going to have to do some
yeah,
work.
I just want to show up and it all be working perfectly and start hunting.
Yeah, me and you both.
Yeah, that would be ideal.
I'll show up when the ducks show up.
Yeah.
you know,
Got 5 years.
Yeah, right. You were talking earlier, we were talking about ideal size and site selection, and you know, if it's even right for your property. Kind of brings to mind for me on my property, there's a couple of things I take into account when I'm thinking about an impoundment. One is that, you know, I got about 200 acres and I'm primarily a deer hunter there, deer and turkeys and small game. You know, I don't want to do anything to disrupt the flow of game in that area. So if I'm going to put in an impoundment, I want to make sure it's not going to have any negative effects on the ecosystem I've already got. The other thing I think about is on my property is that I've got these bottomland hardwoods that are, it's a wetland, you know, that's already a wetland. So when you're building an impoundment, if you're taking an area that is not a wetland and you're basically turning it into one, or if you've got an area that already is a wetland, but you're changing the water levels, what kind of considerations does a landowner need to have in those two scenarios to make sure that you're not doing anything to harm the local ecosystem and just the diversity of game animals that are there?
Yeah. So as far as, you know, being worried about impacting your deer or turkeys or anything like that, I wouldn't be terribly concerned of the effects of an impoundment to those types of critters. I mean, if you build an impoundment in an area where deer and turkey frequent, you're probably planting a food source, and those deer and turkey are going to be able to utilize that impoundment for most of the year, you know, save for the few months where it's actually flooded. But you do have to take into consideration, you know, downstream water quality, potential impacts, you know, the various wetland wildlife that use that area and things like that. So the number one thing a landowner should do when they are considering an impoundment is contact their local Corps of Engineers office, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. They essentially have the final authority over every waterway in the country. And a lot of times, if you're going to build an impoundment, they are going to require you to apply for a 404 permit. Essentially, you give them your plans for your impoundment. They will say, okay, yes, you can do it. Here's your permit. Or they're going to say, no, this, the way you have this impoundment planned, it's going to adversely impact the water quality downstream, may impact some species downstream. You need to reconsider how you're going to build that impoundment. So always, always, always contact your local Corps of Engineer office and discuss your plans with them. And they're going to want you to, you know, give them as detailed of a plan as you have, how much dirt you're going to be moving, how many acres of trees are you potentially having to clear to build your levees, how tall are your levees going to be. They're going to want all of that stuff. And those are things that NRCS or Ducks Unlimited could potentially help you design, write up that original plan to increase your odds of getting it approved by the Corps of Engineers. Now, not every impoundment is going to require a permit, but if you're building an impoundment in an area that has the potential to affect the nearest waterway, from what I understand, they are going to require a permit. Now, I'm not a permit expert. It's a pain in the butt doing it sometimes, especially some of these big public land projects that we're involved with. But it's always better to ask for forgiveness or ask for permission than forgiveness when it comes to the Corps of Engineers and building an impoundment. So reach out to them. They will tell you exactly what you need when you are planning this out, and they will give you the best management practices you need to avoid potentially impacting species in a negative way.
Great advice, man. Jake, you know, you were talking earlier about the impoundment that you built in South Carolina and kind of out of a flyway. And that was inspiring for me because I have no illusions that I'm going to create an impoundment on my property outside of a flyway and just start drawing in ducks like what I've hunted in the Mississippi Delta and other places. That being said, I don't need that. You know, I'm fine with a couple of good shoots a year.
Man, if you could just get like five or six, you know, just be able to change it up a little bit. Like, I don't want to sit in the hunting blind this morning. I want to go shoot something.
That's right.
It's nice to be able to knock off a couple every now and again.
You'd be amazed at what may end up showing up in that impoundment. You know, the first few years, I guess the first couple of years we had it, you know, it was a fair amount of wood ducks and maybe a teal or something. But these last couple of years, we've started killing some black ducks. We've killed a pintail in the mountains of South Carolina. We kill gadwall. We I mean, a few mallards here and there that somehow got lost and ended up in the mountains of South Carolina, but you'd be pretty surprised what may actually be flying through your area.
Yeah, that's one of the exciting things about it is I know there are ducks flying through the air that you're not seeing them, and because you're not either not paying attention or they're too far up or whatever. But it would be really intriguing to just see what happens. You shared that, really, I call that a success story about what you guys did. Are there any other case studies that you are particularly proud of or just were particularly effective that you can tell us about?
Oh man, how much time do you have? I get to see a lot of neat ones, and some of what I do is helping landowners restore old, neglected impoundments. The NRCS has this program called the Wetland Reserve Easement Program. I don't know if you guys are aware of that, but they'll essentially go in and retire old, unproductive farmland and build levees and all of that and build waterfowl impoundments. And some of those 20, 30-year-old impoundments that have been neglected for 30 years, they're kind of useless, degraded water control structures and invasive species and stuff. And you go in and get a little heavy equipment and go in and turn that dirt over and get the right food sources growing. I mean, you go in 6 months later during the next duck season and see a tornado of ducks going down into it. It's pretty rewarding to see. But a couple specific ones that come to mind. There's a big WMA wildlife management area up here in Northeast Arkansas that Ducks Unlimited played a significant part in and revitalizing some old impoundments in one of their rest areas. We went in and rebuilt all the levees, replaced all the water control structures, and implemented a practice called moist soil management, where we're essentially manipulating the dirt to promote native vegetation to grow that waterfowl like. And after we did all that work, these little impoundments really didn't hold ducks for very long. And as soon as we got that work done, the following duck season, the second they got water, you couldn't fit another duck in some of these impoundments. And I happened to hunt on that wildlife management area, so it was pretty cool to know that some of the ducks that we were harvesting were there because of those new impoundments, having the correct food sources to hold them in that area. I worked with a landowner 2 years ago along Big Creek in Arkansas, out in the middle of nowhere. He's an engineer. He's a pretty brilliant gentleman from what I could gather. He was pretty sharp, and he had drew up his own impoundment plans. He did all the calculations, knew exactly how tall his levees needed to be, and all of this, had all of his water control structures figured out the correct way. And all I did was go out there and give him some tips and tricks on what to plant, how to promote good native natural waterfowl food, wrote up a plan for him, and he sent me a drone picture the following February after duck season was over. He still had water in that impoundment that he had just created about 6 months prior. And there must have been 30,000 pintails in this little 80-acre impoundment of his.
Wow.
And it was the former landowner had been growing cotton on it. I mean, it wasn't like it was just a known duck mecca property that he bought. It was just regular old cotton soybean ground that this landowner had the motivation to create waterfowl habitat the right way. And as soon as he did it and the ducks responded, it just tells you what is possible with the correct management. And it was very neat to see.
Well, and that leads me to a question I've got. You mentioned, promoting native vegetation and on the WMA, and then like what he did converting that farm. I mean, a lot of times we talk about impoundments. Everybody's imagining these, laser level precision made duck holes with, millet on one side and standing corn and all this kind of stuff. When in reality, a lot of us just don't have the sight for that or the ability for that. I mean, how do you determine whether or not you really need to plant something like that intensively, or just do something to promote natural vegetation and what's there, whether it be contributing willows on the side or vegetation in the pond? I mean, how do you make that decision on first and foremost, just whether or not to plant anything?
I'd say a lot of it depends on your location and what your neighbors are doing around you. I always try to recommend that landowners grow something that your neighbors aren't growing, just to make your property stand out, give those ducks in the area something different that they wouldn't be able to get next door. Contrary to popular belief, a lot of folks think Ducks Unlimited does nothing but plant corn and heat ponds to keep ducks from migrating. I actually am not a big fan of standing corn. A lot of times you plant nothing but corn in an impoundment. If it's a giant, just one big block of corn, a lot of times those ducks will use it, but that's all they'll do. They will get in that corn early season and they will hardly ever leave. They'll roost in it, they'll feed in it because it offers all the food they need, all the overhead cover they need. So you go in to hunt in the morning, the ducks have been roosted in it all night. You go in to hunt, you push them all out. And I think there's better ways that you can go about managing habitat than just planting one crop like corn. Here in Arkansas, there's plenty of rice being grown. That's another type of hot crop. There's plenty of rice on the landscape. What is limiting on this landscape are those natural sources of vegetation, your smart weeds, your natural millets, your sprangle tops. Those natural vegetation species are what ducks have always eaten when they come to Arkansas. Way before we came in and started planting rice and soybeans and corn, they were coming here eating those natural food sources. So your corn and your rice, it's just like eating potato chips. They'll eat it when it's there, but they can't survive on just rice or corn alone. They're going to starve to death because they don't get all the nutrients they need. These natural food sources that are already in the soil, that all you have to do is provide the right water conditions and soil disturbance to get them to grow. A duck can live off of that stuff, and oftentimes they prefer it, especially when it's warmer outside. It's not cold enough to require them to need biologically that corn and that rice. They're going to prefer those natural food sources anyway. Those natural food sources produce more bugs, which is a very critical component of a duck's diet, especially in late winter. When they're preparing to migrate back north and lay eggs, they're going to be keying in on those bugs, which you can grow a lot more bugs in a native grass stand than you could in your corn or your rice. But there's a lot of benefits to those native grasses and stuff that you can grow with moist soil management that a lot of people don't really know how to encourage to grow, but it's pretty easy to do as long as you get the right guidance on how to do it.
And are y'all tracking any kind of data on your end or from hunting stats to kind of learn those lessons about how to inform kind of the both your current and future plans on what to advise or do in these WMAs?
Well, so there's some Ducks Unlimited specifically isn't doing the research, but we do a lot of work. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Doug Osborne, Osborne Labs, the University of Arkansas, Monticello. He's sort of the waterfowl professor for Arkansas. He does all kinds of research on duck diets and things like that. And these last couple of years, they've been doing diet studies on harvested ducks where they can collect feces from a harvested duck, run that feces through a DNA database, and basically figure out everything that duck has eaten in the last week or so prior to being harvested. And the top four or five food sources were, number one, red oak acorns. The next three or four were those moist soil species with a few invertebrate bugs mixed in. Those are the top five or six food sources for a duck in Arkansas. Acorns, moist soil species, bugs, and then rice and all of that's a little bit farther down the list. So it tells you what those ducks are really preferring. I mean, that's what they were adapted to coming to Arkansas to eat originally. Acorns when the bottoms flooded and those disturbed areas where a tornado came through those bottom lands and knocked down some trees and put some sunlight on the ground. Moist soil species grew naturally. That's what those ducks evolved eating. And if we can promote more of that type of habitat on the landscape, I really think it would, I think the folks putting that habitat on the ground would really benefit from it.
Yep. And the wildlife too, like you're saying, that kind of brings me to my next question is, you know, obviously we all want, you know, duck natos. You build an impoundment, you want to go see a bunch of ducks in it. So I would think that would be a success there. But are there any other measures that you guys use to know that it was a success?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's any way to really measure it on paper as far as a wildlife benefiting from it. There's some stuff you could do, some water qualities. Any wetland you build, manage it correctly, it's going to have some water quality benefits and flood water retention benefits and things like that that you can quantify that are going to make the environmentalist in you happy. But measuring the success of any impoundment is really just up to the person who built it and, you know, what they personally get out of it. And obviously seeing ducks use those impoundments in a large number tells you you did something right. And in my opinion, that's really how you measure success, is seeing the ducks on it and how happy are the landowners that built it.
Yeah. So like if kids kill their first duck, or if Joe finally hits one,
success.
There's 30,000 pintails, and I think I got it. I can get it.
You might hit one.
Yeah, I get it. I'm glad you brought up the moist soil management, Jake, because, you know, I feel like, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't want to feel like this is just a possibility for a cost share program for a landowner to have just his own little honey hole hunting spot. You were talking about how, you know, that moist soil management really gives the ducks what they're looking for from those moist soil species. And if you have a bottom, you know, that has hardwoods, of course, they're going to get those acorns there too. But I mean, from a practical standpoint, I feel like if I had an impoundment in my bottom and planted something in there, it's going to get decimated by deer and hogs. I mean, there's probably not going to be anything left by the time duck season rolls around, would be my guess. What I'm hearing you say is it's really not about that as much. And the thing I really like about that too is, you know, it's kind of the difference between planting a food plot and putting out a corn feeder. When you plant a food plot, you're providing forage before the season, during the season, and after the season. It's a year-round food source for that native wildlife. And it sounds like these waterfowl impoundments are really critical for ducks and waterfowl, not just for you to hunt over them, but when they're making their migration. Sounds like focusing on that limited resource on the landscape is going to be key. And it's not just providing good hunting, it's providing something that the ducks need. Is there any data to reflect that, though? Like, is Ducks Unlimited looking at this going, the ducks need more habitat and we're adding it with these impoundments, and that's why there's that cost share money out there available?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought that up. So basically all management decisions that Ducks Unlimited or any state agency makes that's related to waterfowl, we follow what is called the North American Waterfowl Management Plan that is put out by the Fish and Wildlife Service every few years. And basically what that plan reflects, they do a nationwide study, varies by region to region. They go out and take an assessment of how much habitat's out there, what different types of habitat are there, what food sources are we lacking, what are we short on, what do we need to work on, what type of habitat do we need to work on promoting more of. And as that North American Waterfowl Management Plan gets updated every few years, that sort of guides us to focus on what type of projects do we need to focus on in each region. It influences, you know, the farm bill comes out every few years and puts new money into the NRCS's pocket to put different habitat management practices on the ground. It frees up money for Ducks Unlimited to utilize to do work on the ground. So, you know, every few years we figure out, okay, we're this many acres short of rice that we think we need to sustain the number of ducks that come to Arkansas. We're this many acres short of moist soil habitat in Arkansas that we think we need to sustain the ducks that come here. So there is data out there that assesses the deficits of each of those habitat types, and that's updated every few years, and that gives us an idea of what practices we need to promote.
Jake, I love talking people like you who've been there, done that, seen it done on lots of different types of properties. Not just seen it done, though, but seeing the before and the after. And, you know, it's inspiring. It makes me want to – I'm kind of like sitting here looking at a map of my property going, all right, where are we going to put this thing? It's been a lot of fun to sit here and talk with you about this. But, you know, for landowners who are ready to take the leap, you've already mentioned getting in touch with that local DU office, NRCS office, making sure you're doing what you need to do with the Corps of Engineers. For folks that want a little bit more information, may want to dig a little deeper on this, where would you recommend they go to learn more about what DU is doing with waterfowl impoundments?
We're on social media in a variety of ways for different parts of the country that we work. I know the southern region of Ducks Unlimited, which really covers the southeast and Texas and Oklahoma and places like that. We have a Facebook page that'll every now and then they'll update some of the projects that we're working on that highlights the type of work that we do. So look at your local Ducks Unlimited pages on social media. You can go to our main website, ducks.org, and you can actually look at the work that we're doing specific to each state. You can put in the state that you live in, and there will be some resources there to one, points you towards the staff you need to reach out to, and two, it may also show some of the active programs we have going on in that state that may benefit you. I would strongly recommend you look up some of the various federal conservation programs out there, like CRP, and which is the Conservation Reserve Program, and then WRE, which is the Wetland Reserve Easement Program. Those are some other federal resources that may benefit you depending on the type of work you may want to do. But as always, the number one thing you need to do, call your local NRCS office, your local Ducks Unlimited office. Get folks out there on your property to look the place over and tell you what's feasible, what's not feasible. Your state wildlife agency also probably has some private lands biologists that do the same type of stuff that I do. So having somebody put boots on the ground on your property is going to benefit you tremendously. They're going to tell you exactly what programs would fit your property, what's feasible, what's not, is it even worth doing it in your area. They're going to shoot you straight, and that's where you're going to get the most of your help.
Good information, Jake. We really enjoyed it today. Thanks for being on Hunting Land with us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Good luck this season.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. This week's show is brought to you by Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. Well, yeah, you've hunted on a good many private impoundments in our part of the world, not being in a flyway. I mean, I think, you know, doing this in a flyway, of course, makes total sense. It's being done a lot. But let's talk about that for a second. What's been your experience with it? I mean, if you build it, do they come? And where are you surprised at what's actually around?
Yeah, and like you pointed out, a lot of it just takes time. You can't build a duck pond in the desert and expect them to show up. But so there's got to be some contributing factor. Like with us, you've got the river systems and natural potholes and things like that. And then, of course, you've got the weather side of things that pushes birds down. It's always the probably the most critical factor for us. But yeah, I mean, we've had excellent results pretty much everywhere, given, you know, time and effort. You don't just let it lax on you, because it will go backwards on you if you don't do something to maintain it. But most of ours are pretty easy maintenance, just natural wet bottoms that we help promote with some levees or water control systems to help improve or increase the size of those. Most of them will start off with pretty quick wood duck and ringneck and diver involvement, and then over time the big ducks, as we call them, the mallards and the gadwall and the widgeon and more of the trophy ducks start to show up and use it as time goes by.
It's inspiring to think that that's possible outside of a flyway. The thing that was inspiring to me most about this show was that Ducks Unlimited is looking at this from a landscape level, and they're really asking themselves, what do the ducks need? You know, this isn't just a private landowner honey hole, you know, welfare system. This is like,
it's providing to the entire ecosystem for the ducks. They actually need it to come down and eat and be able to increase their numbers. That is cool.
Yeah, we need moist soil here. We need some rice here. Like, and you're going to get approved or not approved, but what, based on what the resource needs. And that's something to feel good about, that you're doing something, leaving the property better than you found it. And I think that's what most landowners want to do. What's your big takeaway, Butch?
I think whenever I asked him, you know, kind of, obviously we all want to see ducks if you build a waterfowl impoundment, but that's a great, you know, what I would call a success too. You know, you're increasing the biodiversity of your property, giving the ducks what they need, and that's just kind of a win-win for everybody. And if you get to shoot a couple, that's awesome too. I would say what definitely stuck out to me is, you know, you do want to see ducks there the next year. You know, you feel like you put all this money and time into it, and they're not there the next year, or you get a couple here, a couple there. What Jake was saying was it might take, you know, 4 or 5 years to get that thing right, to get it set up and keep the ducks coming back there and imprinted, and you have what they need for them to return. So that's kind of a long game. So that stuck out to me for sure.
Yeah. Not only starting with a reasonable expectation, but then understanding, like, okay, if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to invest the energy, the money,
And you stick with it for a little while.
the land, that I need to be prepared. This is a 5-year turnaround. It's in a year turnaround. And it's not unsimilar to, you know, no-till planting as opposed to conventional tillage. Like, you're not going to see the turnaround in year one, but if you stick with it, the proof is there. And Jake did a good job of really giving us some inspirational examples of what's possible. It's something I'm going to have to be thinking about on my property.
Yep, I'm definitely fired up. Pepper here keeps hearing the word duck. She's licking my leg over here. She's ready. So where's the shotgun at, Cap?
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen, so here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list, and wherever you are listening to podcasts, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.